Support for Commodity Week Online comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, now hosting risk management seminars. A complete list of seminars is at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the February 1st edition of Commodity Week. The marketplace seems divided on where old crop prices are headed, but secure, at least for the moment, in much lower new crop prices by harvest. And so it begins, as the focus slowly turns from one hemisphere to the other. We'll try to find the middle ground today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Ray Jenkins from the Cargill plant in Eddyville, Iowa. Our panelists today include Matt Bennett from TGM out of Windsor, Illinois, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, and Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. By the way, have you ordered your tickets yet for the March 5th All-Day Ag Outlook scheduled for the Beef House in Covington, Indiana? If not, make the phone call right now, at least during business hours, at 217-333-7300.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
Well, let's open today's discussion with this question. This week, farmers, of course, felt compelled, should our cash grain analyst on the air be accurate, to make some additional old crop corn sales. I suppose this has to do with both price and timing, but given the short supplies, I'm wondering if you think there might be better opportunities down the road or not. Pete Manhart.
There may be more opportunities down the road, but right now with the basis being good and the price on the board being good, you could get over $7.50 a lot of different days, and I think some people took advantage of that. And on corn, it was over $15 a few days. So I think there was a lot of cash that did go out on Thursday and Friday when we had the highs. I think there will be more opportunities down the road, but you never know. But I think there should be on old crop.
Yeah, I guess I'd agree with Pete. That $7.50 number on the cash corn old crop, I think, was kind of a good number people were targeting, and I don't think there's anything wrong with selling a little bit of corn there. I probably want to would agree with Pete as well that I probably want to hold on to some old crop corn though and have some, if for no other reason, maybe just as a hedge kind of against maybe some new crop sales that I want to get on the books here as we move forward.
And Matt Bennett.
I agree for the most part with these guys. Whenever you look at these cash sales around $7.50, a lot of guys were worried that they weren't going to get corn sold even over $7 at one time. So getting back to the $7.50 level is awfully attractive for these guys. But, guys that are following the market closely see what's going on with the ethanol numbers and export numbers, and they're a little bit hesitant to hold on to too much at this point. And so, I can go either way with these guys. I'd hate to see them sitting on too much, but at the same time, I don't want to see them, get rid of everything.
I had guys sell out on both old crop corn and beans and just buy calls and have only a finite amount, too. That's a possibility.
The numbers this week look like this from the Chicago Board of Trade, CME Group. March contract for the corn on the week had a high of $7.46 and a quarter. It's low at $7.19 for the trade. Settlement price at $7.36 on Friday afternoon was 15 and a quarter cents higher than it was last week for the March. December contract at $5.92 finished 7 and three quarters of a cent higher. That was kind of a nice finish to the week, and maybe even a better start to the month of February when we're setting crop insurance.
Yeah, we've had the new crop prices come back here. We've got a 605 high for January, which typically we come back and try to test that January high sometime during the growing season. But really, I think if you look back through history, I think 601 1 year was the highest that we had for the February price. So we're right here at the highest prices we've ever had for this time of the year from a new crop corn standpoint.
And so what does that tell you about things producers should be considering in the month of February, not only for crop insurance, but new crop corn sales?
Well, when you put the two of those together, there's no doubt that this is some of the best profitability levels that we've looked at for a long time. We've been doing a lot of meetings, of course, and that's one of the things that we go over. And I think I'm seeing from a lot of producers really a little bit of surprise at how some of the things look. So I think you have to consider some sales if you haven't made any sales, but you also have to look to defend those sales with some call options.
Yeah, if you're making sales, I would look at calls. If you're not making any sales, I'd actually look at some puts also. If we plant all those acres they're talking about and have a 150 average, we'd have a huge carryover.
Matt, your view on new crop sales?
Yeah, I've been saying for quite some time I'd be pretty interested in guys stepping in, at least covering their input costs. I think it's a wise thing to do whenever you look at some of these price levels. At most people's input costs, it's definitely very profitable. And like these guys are saying, if we do tack on 100 million acres and then we throw a 150 or 155 in there on top of that, guys are going to be kicking themselves for not having something in place. So at the very least, I'm with Pete. You know, let's get something in place to set a floor into this market if we're not really wanting to make sales just yet.
And I guess I didn't say this, but I think that maybe looking at that deductible on your crop insurance, so if you take 85%, that 15% that you don't have on the crop insurance, I think you concentrate on that here to begin with and look at getting that covered.
You know, there are some people that want to be contrarians in this marketplace, meaning when they look out at new crop or at least at the even at the old crop prices, they're thinking, well, yeah, downside is really risky, but there's some fundamentals at play, they believe, mostly weather, both in the United States and in South America, that might cause some problems. Most often we hear about the dry weather, Pete, out west.
Yeah, we've heard about that. We also have places in Illinois that are very dry. Haven't had much all last year, so there are people thinking that the crop size won't be that good this year because of lack of water. We don't know that. I think you have to plan on at least kind of an average year. And if we plant 98, 99 million acres with a less than normal yield of 148, you're still at 2 billion carryout.
I know, Matt, that as a farmer mentality, you're optimistic and you look at both about the crop and then maybe pessimistic about the weather at the same time. But it's all about the summer weather, I suppose, more than anything else.
Yeah, and to be honest, what I always say is it's all about profitability. And you know, I've been all over here in the last couple of weeks, talked to guys from Illinois, Indiana, and Iowa. And my immediate area right in here around Windsor and Shelby County is one of the areas, I guess, one of the few areas that I know for a fact is not really hurting for moisture. I mean, you get south of here, obviously there's ample moisture, but you get north of here and there's a lot of areas that people are really worried about, and you get west and northern Indiana. There's several areas that moisture is a real concern, so I can understand the contrarian's point of view, but on the other hand, whenever you have profitability that you can lock into place, it's probably unwise not to take advantage of at least some of that.
A couple of things, Bill, on the world front. Informa's numbers on Friday as they related to corn showed Argentina with a smaller crop, down 2 million from their forecast last month, but also with Brazil having a higher crop, up 4.1 million.
Yeah, and I guess that wasn't a total surprise because if you have been watching the weather, I think you saw that Argentina was hurting more than Brazil was, and Brazil was really having pretty decent weather. you know, overall, if we're that close, I guess it'd be a good estimate. But I think I would kind of be in that boat that they're coming through. Brazil's coming through the season pretty good shape. They've got too much rain in some areas that's delaying bean harvest. But, I mean, I think that's, as we found out in 2009, that's probably good for the corn crop.
Pete, on the domestic front, can you take us through some of the fundamentals, livestock numbers, exports numbers again? Who, and we've asked this question many times, but still it appears somebody has to continue to blink or at least stop using corn that's in really short supply in the United States.
Yeah, I think the thing you have to look at is livestock feed. Everybody thinks that should be higher numbers because there's no grass, there's no anything to feed livestock now, so they're going to have to feed wheat and corn. So they're thinking feed numbers should be up, but exports right now we're half of what we were down 500 million bushels there, and I think estimated only at 950 would be the first time under a billion in many years, and that's a problem. And then ethanol usage or grind is lower. We might not make that 4.5 billion. So usage-wise, you've got people fighting each other over how much will we really have to feed livestock versus will we get any of these exports back. A lot of people think we'll get some of the exports back, but not to the extent of the last few years.
Matt, export market at a 43-year low, in fact. From your vantage point at the elevator, who are the end users that are most serious about cutting back at this point?
Well, I think you've seen definitely some ethanol people that have kind of stepped away, you know, with Abengoa shutting down a couple plants, and then you see these ethanol numbers. Definitely there's some profitability issues there. You know, whenever you look at the exports, you know, like you say, 40-plus year low, and that's just the, you know, what the USDA is saying that we're going to come up with, and we're running behind what we were running, you know, for the five-year pace. So, you know, we got to hope that they pick up, but at this point it looks like we may be looking at more than a 40-plus year low.
Yeah, I think that on the old corn we have done some additional rationing with this increase in prices that we've seen right recently here, and we have seen some ethanol plants slow down. The exports are pretty much gone, and I don't see them coming back. If you look at Black Sea corn this week, it was about $1.50 or something like that cheaper than U.S. corn for new crop for December delivery out there. So we've got competition. We've got expanded acres around the globe, and it's going to be hard to get that export market back, I believe.
A few other numbers from the CME Group. March wheat was down 11.5 cents at $7.65. July there at $7.78 and a quarter, down 10 and a quarter. The March beans had a top this week at $14.86 and a half. Their bottom, 14.34 and three quarters, settled 33 and a quarter higher from the previous Friday at $14.74 and a quarter. November beans at $13.32 and a half were up 29 and a half cents. Pete, they keep saying Argentina's in trouble, and they may not raise as many beans as had been hoped earlier in the season.
Yeah, several this last week came out with lowered numbers for Argentina on beans. Even Brazil numbers are coming in about 4 to 6% less than expected on what they have harvested. So that's out there. And then China's crush is very, very profitable. So they're lining up as much as they can to buy from wherever. We supposedly are going to move south now on sales, but they continue to buy more from us also. But shortage worldwide, especially if Argentina and Brazil crop is less.
Your assessment of soybeans, Matt?
Well, whenever, I mean, I agree with what Pete's saying. I also realize, you know, out of Brazil, you're looking at a substantial increase in acreage they planted this year. And so, you know, whenever you look about the total amount of available bean supply out of South America, it's still quite large. And so, you know, whenever I look at this from our vantage point, obviously we're awfully tight on soybeans. It's going to be interesting to see when they actually are able to get beans to port to where they can export them, and when we do shift this demand from us to them, because I'm not real sure, you know, as fast as what our pace has been, that we can meet much more needs to begin with.
New and old crop sales and other assessments.
I did some new crop sales on beans this week, $13 plus in the cash market. I don't see anything wrong with that. I'm trying to kind of be patient as we go along here, not get too aggressive, but I think you got to take advantage of higher prices in the market. Another thing I just wanted to point out that hadn't been mentioned, I agree with what these guys said, but I think this drop in the dollar today had something to do with the bean market as well. I think that was a positive for the beans globally.
New and old crop sales?
I'd like to be finishing up old crop sales. You can hold a few, but I'd just soon sell them and buy some July calls on new crop. Anything over 13, I don't think it's a bad place to start either some sales, or we got to 13.39 yesterday, hedge some anyway, that 15-20% you don't have covered.
Matt, you?
Yeah, I'm with Pete. I'm probably down to gambling bushels on my old crop, and then as far as new crop goes, I agree with both these guys. We probably ought to be looking at doing something at this $13 level. I think, you know, a very real possibility that the balance sheet on beans could change significantly here in the next several months, and so I really don't want to be sitting on too many, you know, just all my eggs in one basket. I'd like to at least get maybe a quarter of my beans sold in this $13 area.
You're listening to Commodity Week, back in 2 minutes.
Support for Commodity Week comes from Agrigold Hybrids, featuring the Agrigold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgrigoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser with a look at the weather for corn and soybean production in South America. The month of January was a dry one in Argentina, and that trend is expected to continue into February. Rainfall for January across the major corn and soybean production areas of Argentina was mostly well under 50%. For some producers in Argentina, there is a little short-term relief as a front is bringing scattered thunderstorms Friday into Saturday. Amounts in eastern Cordoba, southern Santa Fe, and most of Entre Rios should range between 1/2 to 1.5 inches. Other areas farther south and north will likely miss significant rainfall from the system. All areas of Argentina turn dry Sunday, and no significant rainfall is expected through at least February 10th. Hot weather is also expected across western Argentina next week. This is a situation that will have to be monitored closely in the coming weeks, as February is a critical month for corn pollination and soybean development in Argentina. In Paraguay and southern Brazil, conditions are not much better. Rainfall was well below average in January, and bone-dry conditions prevailed from southern Mato Grosso do Sul and Sao Paulo southward during the past week. Scattered thunderstorms are likely in southern and eastern Rio Grande do Sul and neighboring Santa Catarina on Saturday. Otherwise, dry weather is expected to continue through the first 10 days of the month. The only South American area with near-average rainfall in January was center-west into southeast Brazil and Bahia. Over the next 10 days, frequent thunderstorms will continue to provide needed moisture for most of Mato Grosso, northern Mato Grosso do Sul, Goiás and Minas Gerais, and northern Sao Paulo. Meanwhile, Bahia will likely trend drier. That is your South American weather update for Commodity Week. I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser.
This is the February 1st edition of Commodity Week. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists include today Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from here in Champaign County, and Matt Bennett of TGM out of Windsor, Illinois. On the phone line is Ray Jenkins of Cargill out of Eddyville, Iowa. We'll talk to Ray in just a moment. A reminder that next week we will be on the road quite a few days, 4 out of 5, in fact, with our Ag Outlook panels. I was asked Friday several times about the Farm Credit Services panel in Mahomet and whether you needed to be pre-registered for that one. The answer is no. It's at 6 o'clock there in Mahomet at the Farm Credit Services building. On Tuesday, we'll be in Sycamore at the Farm Bureau building. That one starts at 1 o'clock, actually 3 o'clock for us, but you'll want to be there for 1 o'clock as they have several things happening with Castle Bank there. And then on Wednesday at the Illinois Pork Expo, cost $10 to get into the expo, but Sue Martin, David Nelson, and Dan Zwicker will be on hand. That's at 1:30 in the afternoon. Go early, see the expo and all the exposition. And then on Thursday, we'll be at Casey, Illinois at the Richards Farm Restaurant. So much to do next week if you want to come out and visit with us at one of our Will Ag Outlook panels. On the phone line with us from Eddyville, Iowa now is the plant manager there from Cargill. His name is Ray Jenkins. He's been on the show many times. Ray, thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
Todd.
So tell me, Ray, farmers here in our part of the world managed to move quite a few bushels of corn this week. How about for you?
In our part of the world, southeast Iowa, it was a little quiet, although we've suffered another character-building crop year in 2012. So we're only looking at about half a crop in far southern Iowa and southeastern part of the state. So folks are a little slower to pull the trigger on the remaining bushels.
How are you getting bushels bought, and how much do you have to pay over to get it at the present?
Well, fortunately, the worst of the crop shortfall was confined to the bottom counties in the state. And as we move up toward Interstate 80 north of us, looking at a crop, 140, 150 bushels. And then there's a nice sweet spot just east of Des Moines and north of about six or eight counties, probably going to end up with county averages 175 or better. So we've had the tap, our northern supply base. So far we've been able to still run on 100% truck, and I guess we'll see if we can do that all year long.
Can I follow up on that for just a second? Because isn't that a bit further out? If I remember correctly, you had kind of a tough year last year, and you had to expand your base, and that's done with cash basis generally. So maybe you can follow up more with where you're at today.
As far as bids, Todd?
Or? That's correct.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, we've had some major production issues here in the last two or three weeks that have really busted our basis back to single digits, 10 over. But in that October, November time period, when the big users like us were needing to put coverage on for Jan, Feb, March, it was taking 40 to 50 over to get that kind of coverage in place.
So, Ray, just looking out, as you look out to the summer bases and what you might expect, I guess my question is, do you see that the futures are going to do some of the work, or do you think that it's pretty much going to all have to be in the bases here in the United States?
I think this year we'll see bases have to do more of the work. Certainly can't rule out a few runs in the board, but it looks like right now that's 765 is going to be pretty severe resistance, but we have a heavily inverted futures, and it seems like the function of the market here is just to inflict persistent pain to all of the users, and every day everyone just has to question, do I want to buy corn, do I want to use the same or less, or what am I going to do? This is going to be a battle all the way to the end.
Yeah, Ray, what do you think that the most that you can see basis levels getting to, the highest that they could get to, first of all? And, you know, second of all, moving forward, where do you think the dam's going to break as far as do you think that the ethanol industry is going to continue to contract between now and next fall? Or do you think that we're going to see just an absolute halt in the export movement? What do you think, where do you think the shortage of where we're going to quit using corn is going to be the most?
Well, as far as summer coverage, there's a real yin and yang between the buyer and the seller right now, because if you really want to put on coverage for July or August out there, valued versus set futures, you're probably looking at somewhere between 160 and 185 over to put that coverage in place. So really big numbers, and that may not be the end of it. Who knows? As far as who's going to blink, I think the real challenge is that we've got this ethanol industry that can start and stop, and we've already gone through one cycle of real low profitability this year and slowed down some of these plants, and now the profitability is regained in a few plants here in Iowa that we're looking at slowing down or stopping, have now extended their processing window out another 1 to 2 months. I would say when it's all over with, we'll have probably used 4.1 to 4.2 million bushels of corn for ethanol usage, because in the end, the inverse is going to get steep enough. The livestock and the food ingredient processors are probably going to end up driving the show.
That would be sharply lower than the $4.7 billion USDA has in its numbers, correct?
Yes. I think that there's a lot of work to be done.
Tell me a couple of other items. Remind me what the Cargill plant there in Eddyville produces. And then I'd like to know, when you wake up in the morning and you ask yourself, how much pain will I allow to be inflicted on this plant, which data points you use to decide when to shut that pain off?
Well, we use about 250,000 bushels a day. 90% of it is going to go to some type of food or food ingredient use. High fructose corn syrup, some other sweeteners, fermentation processes for citric acid, lysine, and MSG, and some across-the-fence customers there. So by far the bulk of our activity falls kind of into the feed ingredient world there. And as far as, what keeps me up day and night is wondering how we're going to cover this last 3, 4, 5 months of this year. That's the big challenge. I think I called one of my bosses up one time and asked him just how much would I have to pay for corn to risk getting fired.
What did he say?
He laughed.
Are you looking at added acres in your area at all for to make up for this shortage that you have now, or is everybody just pretty much talking the same as before, as planning?
In southeast Iowa, we've got we're in the third or fourth tough growing season year down here, and there's probably 8 or 10 counties down here where people were actually looking at a little more beans in their rotation rather than corn. The western part of the state of Iowa has not picked up a whole lot of moisture. You're also hearing some of those things out there. But in the end, it's really going to be where the price of corn is at as we get closer to spring and whether or not we can start to accumulate some moisture.
Ray, the USDA on their last report had 602 for the $602 million for the carryout on corn. What's a realistic number, assuming, you know, average planting dates and stuff, that we really can get by with as we go in, you know, to September 1st?
Oh, I think 750 would be pretty skinny. When you look at how many ethanol plants we've got, and if a lot of these plants are running at that time, they're probably going to want to be pretty full of corn going into that Labor Day weekend with old crop supply. So that's changed our number. I can remember back in 96, I think we were down in the 400, 450 range there for a while. And quite honestly, by the 10th or 15th of August, the country was pretty much void of any corn supply.
Thank you so much, Ray, for taking the time with us today.
Thank you.
That's Ray Jenkins of Cargill. He's in Eddyville, Iowa. Now a time for a final word from our panelists in studio. We'll start with you, Pete Manhart.
I think we need to be looking at protecting both old crop and new crop. When we have these bounces up, be looking to hedge some or let loose of some. If we grow the 98 million plus 150, we'll have a four in front of prices.
Pete Manhart is with Bates Commodities. Bill Maris with Strategic Farm Marketing.
I would agree with that, but, if we didn't have this short supply of corn, old crop, and the dry weather, it would be easy. I think that's why you have to defend this thing when you make those sales.
And Matt Bennett of TGM.
I think we're looking at a volatile market moving forward, and I think the name of the game is doing some risk management and locking in some profitability for your farm.
Thanks for listening to Commodity Week. That wraps it up. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.